Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
Hard-edged, hard-nosed, hard to beat.
Where are you coming from in this one?
Your 100% essential download.
Jim White and Simon Jordan.
You let this get out of control.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. I'm Jim White, and today myself and Simon asked if respect for referees is firmly in the toilet after Paul Tierney's match report spelled out what was said to him by Nottingham Forest coach Stephen Reid in the aftermath of that controversial game against Liverpool at Anfield. Chief Executive of Ref Support UK Martin Cassidy joined us on the subject. How would he go about dealing with the issue? And Thursday means boxing, with Spencer Oliver once again joining us in studio. This week, we spoke to top trainer Angel Fernandez as his fighter, Fraser Clark, gets set for his bout against Fabio Wardley at the O2 this Easter Sunday, which featured an impromptu guest appearance from another top British fighter. This is Outspoken with White and Jordan.
This is a total illustration of why you should contact me in the morning about what you're going to wear, because both of us have got our very smart
polo neck gang.
Dark polo necks on this morning.
Your polo neck is black and mine is blue, so there's a distinction. I do resent the characterisation of a big fat hypocrite at the beginning of the show, because I've lost 21 pounds in the last 8 weeks.
Really?
So the fat part I take exception to.
All right. There speaks a man who fell off the treadmill at the gym recently and broke his toe.
High speed merchants like myself.
Which was very,
afflicted by those
very
things.
Funny. Incidentally, King Charles is saying that we should all be friendly towards each other at this time.
Yeah.
I said to Luke, I think he's right. So you walk into the office, I'm open embrace to you, and you left me hanging. I was ready for the big friendly hug.
But it was a good job, because the next thing I watch you do is dribble the entire contents of your coffee down your top.
Which is
so
true.
So we've moved on from incontinence pants now to bibs.
Which is very... You can urine back already for big fat hypocrite. Listen, a man called Martin Keown mentioned producer Luke, and I managed to get a copy of it. As you know, everybody out there, and I know we're sounding boring now, but we won a very big award at the beginning of the week for this show. Martin Keown to producer Luke. Is it right that our show, that I make a large contribution to, won an award on Monday night? Is this true?
Indeed.
Martin, if you're listening, yes, in spite of you, we won it. And Martin will be in there tomorrow, or maybe he won't after that.
He normally does baking over Easter, doesn't he? Is it Christmas or Easter he does baking?
That's right. Yeah, it's Christmas. He brought in his own mince pies.
Oh, maybe he'll bring in some homemade hot cross buns or something.
Yeah, that would be nice. Martin's at home with the pinny on, keeping a very close watch on the oven temperature.
Fanny credit, Keon.
That's right. I hope all your donuts turn out like... No, I'm not going to say that. So it's going to be a busy, busy show, Simon. We're going to talk boxing later on this morning.
Yep.
I've asked you already, who are you going with in the big fight on Sunday night? Who do you take to...
Fabio Wardley.
Have their hand raised at the end. Fabio Wardley?
Yeah.
All right, okay. Many people in the know, and I'm not saying you're not, but many people in the know are going for Fraser Clark.
Indeed.
But anyway, we should get into that later on this morning. As you know, we stream live on YouTube and Facebook. If you want to watch the show, you can. He's wearing a more expensive polo neck than me, but that's just a fact. Head over to the official TalkSport channel on those platforms. Simon, after all the messaging and all the debates, is referee respect still in the toilet? What is this all about? I'll tell you what it's about. Nottingham Forest first team coach Stephen Reid has been given a two-match touchline ban and fined £5,000 after calling the referee Paul Tierney the C-word three times on the field of play. What happened on that occasion? Forest were angry with a 99th minute Darwin Nunez winner. The game was stopped because of a head injury to Ibrahima Konate. So instead of allowing Forest to restart play, Liverpool were given the restart. And what do you know? They went up the other end and scored. Reed went off his head, went on the field and got seriously verbally stuck in to the referee. Where are we going with this, Simon? I mean, there are those, and we'll hear more about this shortly, who are saying that's not enough. How much of a cardinal sin or otherwise is this? Is that a kind of right and just punishment? A two-match touchline ban and a £5,000 fine?
Look, it's a punishment. And I don't think that we are seeing a worsening of the outlook. There is always going to be exceptional circumstances. I've known Stephen Reid for years. He played for Millwall. He was with Theo. He's a nice lad. He's had a decent career. And that doesn't necessarily give any explanation as to the reasons why he stepped across the line, because there is a line. I mean, look, you know, conversations with Mike Dean, he's talked about, you know, robust language being used by referees towards players. You know, there is a language of the industry that sometimes that gets utilised. It's industrial language. But when you get to the point with what Stephen said and the manner in which he said it and the fact he's repeated it and kept on repeating it,
yes,
you've crossed
the
line.
Yeah.
So there needs to be a consequence. And I'm always thinking about consequences and always thinking about what they actually mean to people. It's like when managers get touchline banned, it's quite laughable. It's window dressing, because most of the time they're in the stadium or they're picking the team from somewhere else. They've done everything else they've got to do besides be on the touchline on a Saturday afternoon. And I've always felt that if you really want to stop something, you've got to be a bit more meaningful about it. You've got to affect people's livelihoods. You've got to affect their professional reputation, because in part, a lot of the fan base will say, well, I'm glad you told him. I'm glad that referee got told, because that's what we think.
Yeah.
And that's the nature of the sort of combative and aggressive nature of sport, and specifically football.
So that alternative punishment you mentioned moments ago, what does that look like?
Well, I'm just flying kites and floating ideas about if we really think that it's a problem. If the game really thinks that the attitude towards officials and the behaviour on touchlines and in technical areas is reaching a point, which I don't think it is, that it's becoming far too much, then touchline bans need to have more consequence. Managers need to be excluded from being able to coaching teams for a week. Fines need to be far more impactive, and there needs to be a greater consequence, so that it actually concentrates the minds of people rather than sort of makes it look like they're bothered by it, and they're really not.
But Simon, it's not a good look, and it's not in any way something that we should relax about. Peter Walton, former referee, he says, "I'm not refereeing in the Premier League anymore, but from afar, it seems to me that players are becoming more abusive towards officials. I suspect this partly because of VAR."
But is it? I mean, we have this tendency to characterise things in the moment and say, right, things are getting worse. Okay, without wanting to disappear into the world of statistics, because they're the beginning of a conversation, is that actually true? Are we actually seeing an increase in player dissent or management outlooks, or are we actually seeing a lowering of the bar of tolerance and the adjustment between that expectation of we're going to squash it, we're going to crush it, we're going to remove it from the game, we're going to have a zero dissent policy.
I mean, it's always been going on, hasn't it?
It's always been going on. So the point that I'm making...
Having said that, though, Tierney's match report makes sad reading. He says Reid came up to him. He then continued to question me, and I repeated that I would speak to him inside. He said, "It's the same every week, you C-word. Yeah. I sure lost it."
He's gone over the top, right? But there are 92 football managers in English football, in professional English football. There are 92 assistant managers, 92 first-team coaches. Are we seeing there are on show every weekend hundreds and hundreds of players? Where is this narrative? Because one person has stepped across the line and pushed the envelope a little bit too far and is now getting consequence for it. Where is this evidence to suggest that actually it's getting worse?
So you don't think referee respect is in the toilet?
No, I don't think it's in the toilet. I think that what we're adjusting it towards is a situation where we're going to have none of it. Before, it was priced in like a whole raft of other things: pitch invasions, tragedy chanting. All of these things were tolerated in football and empathised with or accepted as a landscape of football. Now what's happening is we're saying we're having none of it. So I think Peter Walton's observations are an exaggeration, in the same way that Stephen Reid's reaction is over the top and beyond the pale of acceptability. And again, I in the context, and whilst it's not ideal, and those that want to be offended and all little sensitive little flowers may not think that's perfect.
Yeah.
But the point is that there's a...
Well, you walk out the news building with me at lunchtime. Yeah. And I don't think I've seen that happen, but it's bound to in due course. And somebody comes up and says, Jordan, you C word. I want a word with you.
Yeah.
And then he says it times more.
But that's normally Luke or you.
Are you going to be offended by that? Be honest with me now.
In that context...
Be honest with me now.
No, hold on. In that context, well, no, because they're an irrelevance. In the context of a football match where the authority on the pitch is the referee and you're a participant in a structured environment,
right?
Yes, I'm going to be slightly more irritated than I would be if a random off the street who doesn't happen to like me and probably adorning a Manchester City scarf comes up and calls me a few names.
Well, quite a lot of people are saying, hang on a second. I mean, he ripped into him. He didn't insult him, not once, but three times. He kept it going. So a two-match touchline ban and $5,000. Yeah, sure, he deserves it. Many are actually saying he crossed the line and he should be hit harder, Stephen Reid, whether you know him, Simon, or not.
But I think he should. That was my point.
You think he should be hit harder?
No, I think he should be hit harder because he's crossed the line. And ultimately what I'm saying is the idea of consequencing managers and assistant coach managers and first-team coaches that step across the line by giving them some you know, meaningless touchline ban... When really and truly, if you take, and you've seen it, we laugh about it. Jose Mourinho being smuggled into a dressing room laundry basket.
Yeah.
And we laugh about those things.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is, if you want to stop it, if you really want to stop it, what are you prepared to do it? Is a manager that gets £10 million a year getting a £20,000 fine and a touchline ban, which means he sits up in the stands coordinating from a phone, actually being impacted?
100% engagement. Outspoken with White and Jordan.
Simon, one interesting aspect of this, I want your thoughts on this before we speak to our friend from Ref Support UK, Martin Cassidy. Here's the thing. Who is there on the day? It was the man who Forrest have employed as a referee advisor at the football club, former top ref, Mark Clattenburg, who was on hand on that day to speak, if you please, in the mix zone after the game about that moment.
The ball has to go back to the team that has the possession, and Nottingham Forest clearly had that possession. Nottingham Forest should have had the ball back, and therefore the possession of the ball in a game is completely different. When you give the ball back to the goalkeeper in that situation, Liverpool have then gone on the attack and scored from it. So, you know, everybody, you can understand the frustration tonight that things just seem to be going against Nottingham Forest Football Club at the moment, and we just need to hope that this luck changes in the future.
What do you make of Clattenburg's words there, Simon?
Well, I mean, what he's describing is the circumstances. He's correct. I mean, let's be clear. Whilst it gave the ball back to Liverpool, there were significant passages of play that were in part between the moment that happened and the goal, one of them being their centre-forward deciding to dribble the ball out of the box in the last minute of a game. That doesn't happen. The goal doesn't go in. Of course, if the right decision is made, a two-second error was made, of which I would imagine if you went down the roster of decisions that Mark Clattenburg has made over the years, we can probably find quite a significant amount of incorrect decisions. Now, he can't be responsible for Stephen Reid's behaviour because I don't think he would have had the time or the space to stop Stephen Reid from doing the intervention that he'd had with the referee post the game. But, you know, there's an irony about, you know, poachers turn gamekeepers. There's an irony about Clattenburg sitting in Nottingham Forest, blowing smoke up Marinakis' backside to ensure that he's got a job whilst providing very little solutions to the overriding aspects of what's going on at Nottingham Forest.
At the same time
as potentially not having a group of players or officials, specifically in this instance, a first-team coach, behaving in a way that you'd think that they should. So there's an irony. You know, you would expect a referee that's in that environment to, A, be giving guidance to people about how they behave and interact with officials because they don't want to be seeing more dissent on the pitch and they don't want to see more challenges.
Yeah.
And B, urging people to have a little bit more of a respect that Clattenburg would have felt himself entitled to when he was on the pitch.
Okay, well, the upshot is Stephen Reid was given a two-match touchline ban and he's been fined $5,000. Is that enough? Ref Support UK's Martin Cassidy joins us live. Martin, good morning to you. Is it enough?
No, it clearly isn't. And it's really interesting what you say about Mark Clattenburg, who I consider a friend. I've worked with him recently. And, you know, his role, is he going to come out now and criticise what happened here? Or is he just there to criticise referees? So when you talk about his role in general, to be a productive role, then he needs to be able to criticise his players like he did the referees. So that's an important point that I think is being brought up. Now, the FA's brought in points deductions this year for poor behaviour. It's there. It's there at the lower levels of the game. It's only a couple of steps away from having a, you know, at pro level, which I see this as a positive suggestion. I think, you know, obviously, Forest have got their own problems with points deductions in regards to what's going on there. But I just think we're not doing enough. Money is not a problem for most football clubs. It just isn't. So what is the next step to punish them and get them to take accountability for the behaviours of their players and their coaches? I also believe is that, like happens all the time here, you know, I know he's a coach, but he's probably in the PFA because he's an ex-player. The PFA sits on the sidelines and don't say anything. They literally don't say, actually, that's not what we don't expect that from a player. So I think when people are having a go at the FA and other stakeholders in the game, again, yet again, another situation where a player or a manager has behaved like this really, really poorly and they don't say anything. And I think when all stakeholders stand up in the game, it'll be better.
You just think it's completely unacceptable. Language like that used to a top official not once but three times, Martin. So hit them with a points deduction or threaten them with a points deduction. Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
Well, listen, if there's a stepped approach like you did with everything. The one thing I disagree with Simon on is I do think the respect thing's dead. I think it's become a poison chalice as a word. It's become a stick to beat referees up with. You know, we demand respect. We're not getting it. You must get decisions right, otherwise you don't get respect. You know, respect should be there for everybody. Referees should respect players, and players and everyone else should respect the referee. I also agree that, you know, in the industrial language world, football's come from a commons man's game. It's not so much that now. But fundamentally, you know, the industrial language is there. And I just think it's the intent of the language and what they're doing with it. I think it'd be unreasonable to punish every single swear word that's
ever said.
But you're
picking out a very exceptional item. Respect is something you earned. It's not something you're given instantaneously. Right. You have to have a degree of regard for the officialdom. And I'm always in your camp, Martin, and I'm a major advocate for making sure that the referees are treated as a valued part of the game. When we start moving into sporting sanctions, I agree that needs to be better consequences. When we start moving into sporting sanctions, left, right and centre, you know, all of a sudden we are not having a game anymore. We're having a game run by accountants and lawmakers and lawyers and all manner of things, and I don't want us to get into that space because...
Yeah, but Simon, the first club that's hit by points deduction would stop it overnight.
Well, look... Yeah, maybe it would, maybe it wouldn't. It's not stopped anybody from breaching financial fair play. What it stopped people from doing is having a game that has fluidity attached to it. I do not believe, despite Martin's best protestations, that there is a deterioration in standards in terms of the way that the players... Now, I think the respect argument is not one that needs to be levied on the field. I think it's the respect argument is the one that needs to be levied off the field, because we spend all our time in certain sections of the media castigating and judging referees by almost impossible standards. So when we talk about respect, I'm not entirely sure that the players are deteriorating to a lower level than they've been before. I think the scrutiny and the manner in which it finds itself in the media with constant condemnation, vilification, judgment, disparaging observations, never any nuance, never any context from so-called leading pundits, that's where the respect issues need to be attacked.
But just to be clear, before we go back to Martin, you do or you don't think this is sufficient punishment for Reid?
No, I don't. I think
that, right, you don't. So
but,
you don't.
But I don't think we should be getting towards points. I think we should
So what should we?
Well, I think there should be meaningful consequences. When a manager gets, like I've just said at the beginning of this, when a manager gets told that he's got a touchline banned, that should mean that he's not able to coach for a week. He shouldn't be anywhere near the training ground. He shouldn't be in the stadium. There should be more deeper inroads into consequencing people.
Is that deterrent enough, Martin?
Well, I disagree with Simon. I think the behaviour has got considerably worse. Obviously, I've got a bit more insight into it, you know, with due respect to Simon, because I'm receiving phone calls every week from people who have experienced stuff that doesn't even make the TV. And I think also, you've only got to look what's happened in all the incidents of players touching match officials. We've never seen that before, when it started with Aguero and Sean Massey, and then we are right up to what happens with other people, from Bruno Fernandes on an assistant referee.
Well, hang on. 20 years ago, we had Paolo Di Canio pushing referees over. We've seen situations in the past. You're taking the exceptional and the really high end, and you're suggesting that because of what's happened in a foreign country with an official of a Turkish club, bringing it into our game and looking at, you're taking grassroots football, and what you're saying is that the days of Roy Keane and the entire Man United side as a staple diet, chasing referees, haranguing them, are somehow now back in our game again. That's rubbish, Martin.
No, but Simon, a first-team coach rounding on the referee three times, calling him
a C-word. But it's not the norm.
It's inexcusable.
No one's excusing it. That's not the norm, though. I'm not going to allow I'm a great supporter of Martin. I'm a great supporter of the Respect Campaign for Referees. But I'm not going to allow it to be taken into a situation where all of a sudden the standards that we're now asking referees to be judged by and people's reaction to them is much more stringent than it's ever been.
We're back with Martin Cassidy in a moment. But the thing is, Martin, before we come to you, you'll remember when this show spoke to the head of the decision-making body in football, IFAB, and their CEO, Lucas Brood. And he said this kind of behaviour, like Reid's, is not on.
The football culture has forgotten that it is a sport. It's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be enjoyable. It's supposed to be joyful. It's a very important matter to us. We are starting to identify areas and potentially test areas of the laws of the game, of new laws of the game, or recommendations or guidelines to make sure we really combat this poor part of the game, which is bad behavior, is unfair behavior, mass confrontation, referee being, you know, assaulted in grassroots level, amateur level. But what we see across the globe is a major problem and a major risk to the game. So as a football fan and as the CEO of IFAB, I believe that things have to change.
Sammy, you say it's not getting any worse. Lucas Brood, the man who makes the decisions in all aspects of football, says it is. Martin Cassidy says it is. And here we have an example of it getting worse. There's no debate here, really, surely.
No, but we're talking about the overall trend. We're not talking about exceptional items. No one's defending what Stephen Reid's done. No one defended what Paolo Di Canio did 25 years ago. But to suggest that the entire framework is deteriorating from times gone past, I think is ridiculous, because I know it not to be the case. Now, I think myself and Martin are in the same space about wanting to make sure that referees are given and afforded the right amount of respect and value in the game. We just differ on the method of delivery.
Martin, I'm looking at a lot of messages coming in. I'll read you the start of one. At the end of the day, I'm not defending Stephen Reid, says this listener, but he said the referee caused the issue. If he hadn't been so incompetent, the incident with Stephen Reid would never have taken place. Is that right, Martin? Do you concede that Tierney got the decision wrong and that led to the mayhem after the goal was scored?
Look, he was wrong in law, but does that mean that gives everyone right to treat him like that? No, it doesn't. Like Simon says, we're on the same road. I don't even think I'm disagreeing with Simon here. I just think we're disagreeing on how to react to it. You know, the profile of referee abuse would never be where it was without people like Simon Jordan and Jim White. Let's make that absolutely clear. And I'm forever in debt to that, because no one was talking about it. But when you look at IFAB making these statements, and then you're looking at what the FA are doing, body cam pilots, unheard of. We lobbied for 4 years. Unheard of. Why is that there? It's getting worse. Points deduction, white paper we did to the FA, discussion behind the doors with the FA. Points deduction are now in at grassroots level. All these things have come purely because things are getting worse. Our hotline, what we get, more calls than ever. Our social media, I'm getting it. Video sent to me even this week of really horrible things happening that we're choosing not to put out now because it's just escalating so badly and it's coming to the police. The thing is that I've always said refereeing is a wonderful hobby. It's changed my life forever. I'll always advocate getting into refereeing, and the FA are doing more than ever. But I really think it would be naive to say it's not getting worse. And all the respect in the world to Simon, honestly, God, I'm indebted to what you've done to help us, but it's getting worse. I can evidence it. I can measure it. And everyone can see it on TV. And I think when we're looking at what happened in the Bundesliga, they've just allowed referees to wear body cams. But let
Martin,
them wear body
cams. Can I just ask you by what standards? Because I see police reporting, right. I'm going off on a little tangent here, but just follow me on this journey, about statistics inside football stadiums of incidences of arrests. And they're judged by completely different standards. So they say that they're on the increase or they're on the decrease. But all of a sudden, you look back against the statistics and say, well, actually, these crimes weren't included in the statistics in 1995 and 2005. They've now been included. So, of course, statistics show us something different. I find my eyes a really good judge. And I watch football, and I obviously was involved in it for 10 years and watched my own players. And I don't see that the standards of the way that players interact with referees has got worse. I think it's probably, if not stayed the same, it's got slightly better, because I think there's more focus on it. But I think what's happening, and rightly so, is people are saying our tolerance of it is becoming lesser and lesser and lesser. And by the way, when we're talking about referees demanding and commanding respect, if you want dissent out of the game, let's start having some referees doing their jobs properly on the pitch by dealing with players that not tolerating dissent, sending players off, booking it players, rather than abdicating responsibility because it's more difficult to make that decision.
They sent Reid off.
Reed's not a player. We're talking about players. We're talking. This is a coach, right? This is an example of
a coach.
But does that
not make it worse, Martin? So, we would then get a barrage of messages on a Monday morning. Why was so-and-so sent off for mouthing off at the referee in the 10th minute of the game, and then for 80 minutes we watched 11 against 10? That's what we would get.
I agree, and it happens, and the referees haven't done enough. Absolutely haven't done enough. I absolutely agree with Simon here, but that doesn't give anyone a God-given right to abuse, treat them like they do. So I agree. Look what's happened with this imaginary yellow card. Something else we pushed right at the beginning of the season, this visual show of dissent. So what happens when someone does that imaginary card or gestures like they do on a bench? Everybody can see that they're undermining the authority of the referee, a different piece altogether. When they just say something quietly, I'm sure that most referee, if you swore, you said quietly, without undermining, I think everyone will accept it. But when you escalate it to like this purposeful, intentful decision to go on the field of play, get in his face, he didn't go to his player who made the mistake, who cost the goal, did he? He went straight to the easy option, the match official, but it's tied by guidance.
It's totally unacceptable, Martin. No one would defend it on any level, and I don't even think Stephen Reed on his worst day could come in here and defend one scintilla of what he said. But then to conflate it and inflate it up to being an overall state of the nations is what concerns me. It's one thing empowering people. I'm all for empowering people. I'm all for empowering the right kind of people. But when you empower people and all of a sudden that empowerment takes you into a different direction where people like the guy at IFAB is a job creator and a job justifier. Some of the rules that those clowns bring into place, they're playing to a gallery. There has to be a balance between what we're judging people by and what we're saying has gotten worse.
So Lucas Bruce is a clown, is he?
I think those guys, that look at some of the rules, look at some of the things they've come up with. New face of football administrators that are creating a strangling of the game.
Martin, let's just be clear with how we finish with you. In this instance, you say this would be stamped out if a points deduction was available to be selected as the appropriate punishment and was on the table right now.
Absolutely. As part of a step process to end there, let's have an in-between. Because let's be honest, they're all objecting against blue cards and sin bins. But what do you want to do to improve the game then? You keep objecting against everything to address the situation. But when are you going to take ownership and say, well, I'll tell you what, we're saying no to sin bins. We're saying no to points deduction. But here's what we're going to do. And that's not coming out.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Download, stand well back, listen.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
This Sunday night, there is a belter of a fight because Wardley goes up against Clark, Fabio Wardley against Fraser Clark here in London at the O2. Sunday night, it's live in Talk Sport. It's Sunday night, though, just to emphasise that. And many people go Wardley, many people go Clark. Spencer is in studio with Simon and myself. This man can only think that it's going to end up a Fraser Clark win. Why? Because he's the trainer of Fraser Clark. He's Angel Fernandez, a good friend of ours. Angel, good afternoon. How is he doing? Where is Fraser now with just, what, hours to go, really?
Yes, not long to go. Hi, Jim. Hi, Spencer.
Angel, how are you, mate?
Hello, mate.
which is like training here. How are you guys? The Minster.
Oh, who's that? Oh, Richard Ratpour. What? Wow, he's in decent shape, is he not?
He's ready already.
He is indeed. Richard, how are you doing? Maybe talk about Richard in a few moments, Angel, because there's all sorts of talk about him and Chris Billam-Smith getting it on very shortly. But as regards Fraser Clark, how is he?
Yep, he's good. You know, he's in good experience, confidence, and I'm sure Fabi will be confident as well. It's going to be a fight just like for the fans, you know, just like I think both they're going to put a good performance for the British fans. And we look forward to the challenge. And I'm 100% confident in my fighter that we're going to become victorious on the final.
Yeah, the British title really does bring out the best in fighters. That is, you know, every young fighter's dream is to win that British title. Obviously, Fabio Wardley has done that. He's achieved it. He's defended it. And he's been the underdog in a couple of those fights. Nathan Gorman, who we mentioned earlier, and last time out against David Adelay, a lot of people felt Adelay was going to win, but he proved himself and proved that he belongs at that level. I think the big question mark is, Angel, is can Fraser Clark perform at this level? Because we're going to need to see more, aren't we, than what we've seen so far. You know, we've been talking about it for a while now, about Fraser Clark going through the levels. We need to see him going through the levels. Will we see that on Sunday night?
1,000,000%. I think you're going to see a different Fraser Clark. A more focused, disciplined, understanding of what he needs to do. And I told him from day one, you cannot do what you have been doing so far. It's just going to have to be a different you, a better you. And the training has been going well. There is no injuries. There is no kind of like anything that we could think that have been wrong. So it's just all down to Fraser. In terms of like he hasn't done like for that level, no, he hasn't like done anything pretty much professionally, but I think him performing against Jololov, you know, in the Olympics, against a big puncher, you know, he kind of like not to the extent maybe Fabio done in the pros, but I think Fraser show courage, he's so hard, and I'm sure Fabio will have that as well, and it's going to be down to other elements. Not to them elements, you know, but the win is going to be done to other elements.
Sure. I mean, we were talking about that. His amateur pedigree will stand him in good stead. And one thing we do know about Fraser Clark, which has maybe not been seen in a professional boxing ring yet, is that he can tough it out. I mean, those amazing fights that he had with Joe Joyce as an amateur proved that he's got that in him. You know, he's got that in the locker. And he will need that against Wardley, who is a big puncher with 16 of his 17 fights coming by the way of KO. So he's going to have to be prepared to go through that, isn't he?
No, 100%, you know, but it's not how hard you hit the man, it's where you hit the man.
So hours to go, Angel. If Fraser gets the win that he's seeking on Sunday night, what opens up for him, Angel, after that?
What opens up for Fraser?
Yeah.
Obviously, a lot of opportunities, you know, for him. But we just have to, as we always do, sit down, assess, and then go from there. What's the next steps? What's the things that, obviously, that fight is going to tell us a lot, you know, what to improve, what not to improve, the things to work on, and sit down with the team, sit down with the promoter, with the Sky, and let's see what's the next steps.
We've seen Richard Ratpour shaping up behind you. He seems to be trying to get in shot every given moment, but that's fine by us. We like Richard, Angel. All sorts of talk that he's going to go in against Billam-Smith. If you want, you can wave him over just before we hear from Chris Billam-Smith, who was on Drive yesterday with the boys, and he was asked what might be next. This is Billam-Smith.
A defence against my old mate Richard Ratpour, right, which is hopefully going to get finalised soon. There's been issues on our part. I think it's just got down to finding the right venue and the rest of the show, whether it's going to be like a two headliners on one show, like a massive show, or it's just going to be us headlining. So I don't think it'll be in Bournemouth now, because I think they're looking at June. And I know the club would, I think they have like one weekend a year, which was obviously we had last year. So I think it'll be in London, whether it be at Sellhurst or not, I don't know. I quite like it to be at the O2, because that's where we boxed last time. So get the revenge.
Richard Ratpour has joined us alongside Angel Fernandez this lunchtime. Richard, is this getting ever closer, this shot you're going to have against Billam-Smith? Good afternoon, mate.
Yeah, how you doing? How you doing, guys?
Yeah, very well, Richard. Thanks.
The shot is coming closer. I'm assuming it's probably going to be mid-June. I got a date disclosed to me not long ago, 15th of June, and it's 100% going to be in London. I think this is great because I think Bournemouth is a bit way out. Some people can't get down there, and this is going to be a perfect spot for everybody to come and witness. And it's true what he said. They wanted to. There was talks about them making the Ward versus Wessie fight on the same card, maybe as a double header. But I'm not too sure if that's going to materialize. I'm just pretty much just focused on my fight. But if that does happen, then that's great. That's great for the boxing public. But anyway, it's gonna happen 15th of June. I'm guessing probably maybe Selhurst. I'm guessing Selhurst.
Oh, come on. Yeah. Come on, Spencer.
Richard, how important is that for you to have that home advantage? Because we've been down at the Vitality Stadium before we've seen what it's like. Lawrence Okolie lost down there, actually, but the crowd can be instrumental. When you get these fights of this sort of magnitude, you two had a split decision back in 2019, and you know, you're going over old ground again. But how important is it to get home advantage, you know, with a fight of this magnitude?
Yeah, it's good. Every little helps. At the same time, I'm a very fair type of guy, you know, and he's a champion. So if it was in his own home ground, I wouldn't mind. I think that makes a lot of sense. But fortunately, it's fallen on my lap, you know, for whatever reason. That's great. That's a celebration, and that's a W in itself.
I mean, you both had fantastic careers since you boxed, but like I say, back in 2019, you've both taken different paths. He's gone on to win that world title. You're knocking on the door now, but you're different fighters to what you were back then. What are you expecting from him different this time? Because what we've seen with Billum Smith is he can rough it out and he can tough it out, and, you know, he can come through those tough moments. What are you expecting from him this time?
I think he's going to be... He's gonna have some type of confidence as well, because he's gone through some adversity. Well, probably in the last three fights he had, he's gone through some adversity, but he's found a way to win, and that's going to add to his mental fortitude as a fighter. And obviously that's pretty much been my whole career, especially coming through the British ranks, you know, when the odds were stacked against me, but I found a way to win. So I'm confident I can get the win no matter how the fight is looking. And but I just feel like as a fighter I've improved a lot. People can see by the performances, you know, it's no secret. I'm more intelligent. My boxing IQ is high now. I know what I'm doing. I know who I am. I know my identity, which is very, very dangerous, which is why a lot of people favour me to win.
Your 100% essential download.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. Please leave us a 5-star review. Whatever you get your podcast from, we're back tomorrow to being the best of the show.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.